So we left off in the previous year. We're trying to solve this riddle. On the one hand, we have this Dimin HaTorah called the Piyah V'lo Piksavim. Apparently, Eidus has to be said verbally. It cannot be expressed written word. And yet, we have in the whole institution of Shtaros. We have Sugyas, Shleimos, and the Gemara about documents. The Lord says Gittin, so that's a 90 blot already, assuming there's such a thing called a document in Halacha. So we have Shtar Gittin, Shtar Kedushin, Shtar Mamun. So how do we make sense of this idea that we have Shtaros in Halacha? And yet the Halacha tells us quite emphatically that the Piyah V'lo Piksavim. So we saw an array of different answers in the previous year. And the Rambam has perhaps the most startling of all answers. Let's take a look back again at the Rambam for a moment on the 11th of the Rambam Kavos. The Rambam tells us that the Torah she'ein mekabel eidus, lo b'din imamunus, lo b'din ifashas, alu p'ya eidim, that min ha-Torah, the answer is in ochinami, that min ha-Torah you require eidus ba'al peh. It has to be verbalized. She'ein ba'al pishnayim eidim p'ya lo b'iksavim. So where did Shtaros come from? The entire institution of Shtaros is all midrabbanan. That's the Rambam's startling answer to this dilemma. So the Ramban has many, many powerful questions against the Rambam. We're going to break down the questions really to two. Instead of putting the Ramban itself on the Rambam Kavos, I put the Reb Chaim on the Rambam Kavos, which addresses the questions of the Ramban, but it's about a page and a half of Reb Chaim. Those who have a lot of time on their hands. It's the 14th of the Rambam Kavos. I mean a lot of time in order to read through this. Reb Chaim, so we'll try to give a quick synopsis of Reb Chaim's points. So the Ramban really poses two challenges against the Rambam. So the first challenge is, what the Rambam is basically telling us is that in the world of the Torah proper, the Torah doesn't recognize the concept of a written testimony. If you have two eidim signing on a piece of paper, that's kamanda lesa. That's just a non-existing, that doesn't register with their eyes. So that's a huge problem, argues the Rambam. Because let's take a step back for a moment. We know that a get has to have eidim. That's like a given. Have to be eidim present at the time of the get. Everybody agrees to that. The Gemara derives this from a pasuk, dava dava mimamon. We spoke a lot about this in the past. Ein dava shem epachas b'shnayim. So it's like an absolute given. You have to have eidim present at the get. Where do the eidim have to be present? What role do the eidim perform? That was a huge machlokes at the time. So Rabbi Elazar was the opinion. It's called Eidei Mesira Karsik, that the Eidim have to be present at the time of the actual giving of the get. Must the Eidim sign the get? No. Rabbi Elazar says it's perfectly legitimate to have a piece of paper that says Reuben is divorcing Rachel. There are no signatures. As long as there are two Eidim who witnessed the giving of the get, that's perfectly acceptable according to Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Meir said, that's not the Eidus. You may not even need Eidei Mesira. The Eidus, according to Meir, is Eidei Chasima Karsay. You have to have two witnesses sign on the bottom of the piece of paper. That's what that term is over. How do we paskin l'alacha? So we definitely paskin like Rabbi Elazar to the extent that you don't need Eidei Chasima. We definitely accept the view that if all you have Eidei Mesira is get Obi Kosher, but the Rambam happens to be from that group of Rishonim who maintains that Rabbi Elazar, that Rabbi Meir is also right to a certain extent. And when we paskin Eidei Mesira Karsay, what that means is Eidei Mesira Karsay, Eidei Chasima Karsay. When we paskin, either one is a valid application of Eidus for a get. So you have two choices, you have two tracks of giving a get min haTorah. For sure you require Eidim. So no question you have to have Eidim. So no question that you require Eidim. Where are the Eidim situated? So we paskin Eidim is Sira good enough, but we also paskin, says the Rambam, Eidim Chasima are also good enough. So either one of those two Gittin will be acceptable. So come to Rabban and says, wait a second, let's look at that model for a second that you the Rambam yourself just accepted that there's a piece of paper that says Reuben is divorcing Rachel. There are two witnesses signed on the bottom. That get is handed shalom. There are no eidim present at the time of giving the get. You, the Rambam, just said that get is perfectly acceptable. It's good in the Torah, it's good in the Rabbanan. There's nothing wrong with that get because you, the Rambam, says either eidim mesira or eidim chasima. So says the Rambam, I don't understand. How in the world can that get be valid? Where are the eidim? The halacha is you require eidim. So what are you going to hide behind and say, what do you mean, where are the Eidim? Here they are. It says on the bottom, Reuven and Shimon. It has two names of witnesses on the bottom. But you yourself, the Rambam, told us in Maromachal number 11, that the Torah doesn't recognize written signatures. That's not called an Eidus. Having people sign on the bottom of the document does not meet the criteria in Halacha of called an Eidus. So you basically would just accept it again without any Eidim, which is a violation of the Halacha of, again, requiring Eidim. Everyone agrees. The Rambam himself quotes the Gifu Gavishin. Everybody agrees a get requires Eidim. It's inconceivable not to have Eidim. Which, where are the Eidim? Which set of Eidim are they? Are they signing? Are they there at the delivery? Either one's acceptable. You have to have Eidim. If you yourself hold that Eidim don't register the Chsav min HaTorah, so then you just accept it. You just legitimize the get without Eidim. That's the first question that the Rabban asks according to the Rambam. And then the Rabban has a little bit of a shift in terms of questioning to the Rambam. Let's leave out the complications of Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Meisel, a very, very simple scenario we get. Reuven divorces Rachel. There are two Eidim present, Eidim Asira. He gives her a get. The get is signed. Everything is wonderful. 20 years later, Rachel wants to prove to us that she is divorced. Now, we knew that she was married at one time. So therefore, we're not allowed to permit her to remarry unless we are proved to that she is in fact divorced. We have to have a raya min HaTorah to let her remarry. So what kind of a raya can she bring? So one proof that she could bring is she could actually bring in the Eidim Asira. Let her bring the witnesses who saw the get being given 20 years ago. They'll come and testify and based in. And sure, that's simple. That's easy. Min HaTorah, that's going to work. Unlikely that's going to happen. It's 20 years later. It's 50 years later. Who says the Eidim is still alive? Who says the Eidim remember? Who says the Eidim are in town? So that's what the Mishnah tells us in the fourth bread of Gidin. It's a phenomenal idea to sign a get. Because if you don't sign the get and you're just banking on the people's memories of the Eidim Asira, you're asking for trouble. So therefore, Rabbi Gamliel HaZochi, you're talking about thousands of years ago, before the days of the Mishnah, Rabbi Gamliel HaZochi was Misakim, that you should sign a get. Don't rely just on the Eidim Asira. It's a bad idea to rely on the Eidim Asira. You never know what's going to happen. So comes the Ramban and says, wait a second. 20 years later, we the Beis Din are deliberating and trying to determine, is she divorced or is she not divorced? What's our proof that she's divorced? You have a piece of paper with two witnesses signed on the bottom. Says the Ramban, really? That's a proof min HaTorah? According to you, the Rambam, in the 11th of the sources, a pi shnayim edim, mi piyam lo piksavam, the entire institution of shtaris, afa mi divrei sofrim, mi derabbanon, shtaris are good. It means min HaTorah, we haven't come up with a sufficient proof that she is divorced. We're relying on a din mid derabbanon to let a woman remarry. That's absurd, says the Rabban. We can rely on din mid derabbanon, din mamonis, hefke beis and hefke. We can take money away from you. We'll take your field away from you. But to let a woman remarry, you require a raya that's binding, that's valid min HaTorah. So it's too nuanced of Rabban's questions. It's not the same question. The two questions are, number one, how could we accept a dechasima to create the get, to make the very get effective? And number two, how could we accept a dechasima as a proof that there was a get 20 years before? So the two powerful questions against the Shita Sirah.
Second question. Even Shabbos is only in the Rabbah. I
Well, you know, Kiyum Shas with the Rabbanan means that we have witnesses, and min HaTorah, we're assuming that whatever the witnesses are saying is true. The fact that the other fellow is yelling that it's a forgery, min HaTorah doesn't register, is not accepted. Now, mid the Rabbanan, we require that the Kiyum Shas just offset the Titus Mezuyah from the other fellow. But the very proof itself has to be bound in min HaTorah. We have a woman who's an Eishes Ish min HaTorah, and how in the world can we let her remarry unless we prove that she's not an Eishes Ish min HaTorah? So comes Reb Chaim, the following Yisod, according to Shira Sarabim, it's a principle that we're going to hopefully come back to many, many times in Maseches Gittin, that there are fundamentally two different types of shtaros in halacha. The term of document in halacha doesn't always mean the same thing. This is a Gemara in the first Bech of Maseches Gittin says this very, very clearly, and there are many sugyas that bear out this distinction. There's what we call in halacha a shtar kinyan, and there's what we call in halacha a shtar raya. What is the difference between the two? A shtar kinyan means that the shtar, this document, is what creates the change of status. This document itself creates a chalos, creates a status this is not just a proof that something happened. This is the mechanism of creating that change. Let's say LaMarshall, the classic example of a Shtar Kinyon is a get. When a Reuben gives Rachel the piece of paper, so it's not this piece of paper is proving to us it happened in the past. This is the Gevurah. This is the Chalas Gevurah. With this paper, she becomes Muteres L'shuk. Well, let's say, for example, a Shtar Kiddushin. When Reuven gives Rachel a piece of paper that says, Arepa Kodeshously, this is not a proof that he married her years ago. This is the mechanism of marriage. Or a Shtar Hakno. If Reuven's selling Shimon a field, so a karka is nicknamed a Gibel Drachim. You can sell a field. The mechanism of Kinya, the mechanism of effecting a change in ownership, is either through giving money, through a Shtar, through a Chazocha. So a Shtar is a Dobra Makta. A Shtar is a Shtar Kinya. That's one type of a Shtar. Then there's a totally different kind of ishtar in halacha. Let's say, for example, I want to sell you a field, and we do a ma'aseh kinyan. You pay me for the field. So you give me $1 million for the piece of property. So once you give me the kesef, that house, that field belongs to you. 1,000, there is no need to write a shtar. I made a kinyan, a karka, nicknamed a kesef. It's a pasuk in Novi, so you can buy karka with kesef. There's no question in the world that this karka belongs to you. The problem is, in 20 years from now, how are you going to prove it? In 20 years from now, I'm going to come back, you're going to say, I'm going to take you to a Din Torah. I'm going to say that you stole my field. So the best thing for you to have is some kind of a documentation. Now, in theory, you could have Ede Mesiris, so to speak. In theory, you could have two witnesses come and say, we were there when you gave me the $1 million. That would work also, but that's very, very risky because when you're relying on Ede Mesira, who knows if the enemy could be alive? They can remember, they could be out of town. So therefore, it makes a lot of sense to write up a document to that effect that you sold me the field. The problem is that, wait a second, what is this document doing? Is this document affecting the sale? No, the sale happened already. I already sold you the field. It belonged to you 1,000% based on the money that you gave me. This document is not serving as a shtar kinyan, it's serving as a shtar raya. That's a different kind of a shtar. Same paper, same ink, same witnesses on the bottom, but halachically, conceptually, it's serving a completely different role. So there's a parsha of shtar kinyan, as a sugya of shtar raya. So comes Reb Chaim and says that the Rambam never ever said that the concept of a shtar doesn't exist in HaTorah. That is absurd to say such a thing, that shtaros don't exist in the world of Torah law. Did you ever forget? Did you ever have a shtar kiddushin? Did you ever have a shtar b'chir sadas? A shtar shechur b'kenayni? There are multiple shtaras. There are psukim in chumash that talk about shtaras. Mm-hmm. There's no such thing as a shtar in the Torah. It says Reb Chaim, the Rambam meant this as follows. The Rambam here is talking about Hilchas Eidos. He's talking about Beis Din being chotem. What was the lashon of the Rambam was? V'divrei sofer shechotchem din imam v'zeh shebishtar. The Rabbanon were allowed to use shtaros to prove what the facts of a case are. Says Reb Chaim, a shtar raya is only a concept in the Rabbanon. The fact that you can bring a piece of paper into Beis Din that says on it that Reuven did such and such, and there are two written signatures on the bottom, and the Edom don't show up and open up their mouths in Beis Din, and the Beis Din will take that document, read it, and paskin a din based on that, that's a shtar raya. That's a dimmid rabbanon. Why the Chazal make that dimmid rabbanon? I understand why. To make life easy for people. Otherwise, it's going to be impossible. Who's going to ever be able to bring Edom that somebody lent money a year ago? So comes Reb Chaim and says, the rabbanon never meant to say the entire institution of shtaros is mid rabbanon. That's absurd. The psukim in Chumash against that. The rabbanon in Chazedis is talking about Edus. That's what he's talking about. He's talking about Chol. He's talking about passing based on the rye, the proof of a shtar. A shtar only serves as the proof of something mid the Rabbanon. But when the shtar serves as a shtar kinyan, so of course the shtar kinyan is binding mid HaTorah. Now Reb Chaim goes the extra mile. Comes Reb Chaim and says that the Rambam holds that once a shtar takes on the life of being a shtar kinyan, then it's labeled as a shtar in halacha. Then it's labeled as a Torah accepted entity. And once it takes on the life of being a shtar, catch this one, says Reb Chaim, it can now serve as a raya min haTorah. that the Rambam Shita is you can't create a shtar raya in a Torah. The Torah doesn't have that mechanism. There's no way in the world of the deristical rules to create a shtar raya. The Torah just says that doesn't exist, that entity doesn't exist. What does exist is a shtar kinyan. Once a shtar kinyan is accepted, so it takes on the halachic aspect of being called a shtar, it now is something that you have to reckon with min haTorah. It is something that exists min haTorah. Once that shtar exists min haTorah in the realm of shtar kinyan, you could turn around and use that as a shtaraya mid the araisa, which answers the second question of the Ramban. How is it that a woman walks into the Beis Din with a document that says she was divorced 20 years later, and we let her remarry? Isn't that using a din derabanan to provide a raya min haTorah? The answer is, says Reb Chaim, no. That once the shtar is chal mid araisa as a shtar kinyan, it can turn around and serve as a raya min haTorah as well. The only kind of shtaris that don't exist min haTorah at all are pure, simple shtari raya when the deal was long done, long could have finished, and now we're just writing up an additional document at the end as a proof for the future. A shtar raya on its own two feet doesn't exist in the Torah. That's a din midrabanan, and that would not work in the realm of Gittin. So it's based on this yisod that the Reb Chaim now goes on to explain a very, very cryptic Gemara that we went to the 13th of the Baruch Kamos. It starts with the Mishnah, the beginning of the fourth parak of Masechet Sanhedrin, the first line of the 13th of the Maamar Kamos. Echad din yamamnis, ve'echad din nefashos, v'drisha v'chakira. There is a din in the Torah called drisha v'chakira. Drisha v'chakira are the whole series of questions that we attack a set of Edom when they come. Two Edom come and say that Reuben killed Shimon, so we don't say, hey, thank you so much. We accept your testimony. We have to ask them questions. The Torah says, v'darashta, v'chakarta, v'sha'alta, heitev. You have to ask, and you have to ask again, and you have to interrogate. So there are a whole series of different questions that we ask the Edom. They're what we call basically the seven chakiras. There are seven basic questions that we ask. And the goal of the seven questions is pretty much to determine where and when this event took place, the Mokam and the Zman. We have to make sure we know exactly where the murder took place. We have to know exactly when it took place, what day of the week, what hour of the day, what day of the month, etc. And then in addition to the seven basic questions, we then add on a few more, almost like tangential questions, we call bedikos, which are not per se critical to the case proper, but we use them to kind of just to make sure, just to ascertain the Edom really telling us the truth. So we'll ask the Edom something which is not really per se relevant to the murder. Two Edom come and say, Reuben killed Shimon. So we'll ask the father, oh, Reuben killed Shimon. What color shirt was Reuben wearing? It doesn't make much of a difference. But if one aide says he was wearing a green shirt, the other says wearing a purple shirt. So wait a second, a little bit, something's a little fishy. If the two aides say they don't remember, that's okay. If they say they don't remember where it was, when it was, where it was, that we tossed them out the window. If they can't remember what color shirt was, okay, that's okay. But if they start to give you boomer mindsets and one saying another, then there's something fishy here. And we're going to let them, go. That's what the Mishnah tells us at the end of the first Bethlehem Sechaz Makas, that some of the Tanoim would ask a lot of very, very pointed, very detailed questions to trip up the Edom to such an extent that by the time they would finish tripping up the Edom, they would almost never have a capital case. So Dina Nefashos exists in theory. Did they actually put somebody to death in Dina Nefashos? The Mishnah says so, so rarely. There was one version once every 7 years, one version once every 70 years. It was so, so rare that they actually put somebody to death. Yes, we have the nefashim. It's on the radar screen. So anyone knows that they could potentially be the nefashim. So it's a good deterrent. On the other hand, the Beis Din would always finagle in such a way to get out of actually putting a person to death. The Mishnah tells a story about how Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was once sitting on a case of the nefashim, and Reuben to Edom came and said, Reuben killed Shimon, and he started, where did it take place? So they came to talk about the place. And then apparently in the course of the story, so the Edom said it was under a fig tree. So really was under a fig tree? What were the figs pointing in that direction or were they pointing in the other? Was it what color figs were? Yes, these ridiculous questions. The Edom, they started to lie, they started to get all nervous, and they started to contradict each other. Tossed out the Edom. So you have to always be careful. If you talk too much with the Edom, so you may end up disqualifying yourself. But the bottom line is the basic halacha of the seven chakiras, the time and the place, that's absolutely critical, and they have to be able to answer every one of those questions properly. So comes the Mishnah and says, those dinim of drish v'chakir of time and place ascertaining, those halachas are equally true for dinim mamonos as well as dinim fashas. We know that there are some differences between capital cases and monetary cases, but this is actually not one of them. So the Mishnah continues, how do we know that to be true? To the end of the first line, 30th Baruch Hu, Shnema Mishpat Echad Yalachem. The Torah says that Mishpat Echad Yalachem, the judgments are the same. All the rules of the judgment are the same. That the Mabonis, the Fashas, they all require Dusha Chakimah. So the Gemara raises a question. Is that really true? So take a look at the first line of the Gemara, the 13th of Mamakramas. Dina Mabonis Bibain and Dusha Chakira? Really? Is that really true? So the Gemara gives a little bit of a complicated question. Then the Gemara goes a little bit of a simpler question. We'll skip a little bit to the simpler question. Let's skip to four lines into the Gemara. So the Gemara says, the first one is Icharu. Tikshilach Masdis and Shtarichav Mugdamim Psulim Amucharin Ksheirin. The Isak Adayatech Bina Dush Chakira Amucharin Amai Ksheirin. There's a Mishnah of Masech HaShviyas that tells us as follows. This is touching on what we learned in Bikiyas about Zmanim and Shtar. There's a basic halacha that governs documents. It's as follows. If I borrow $1,000 from you, we're going to date that shtar, and we really want to make sure we have the right date in the shtar. Because if we have the wrong date in the shtar, that's going to lead to potentially somebody paying what they don't have to pay. So, for example, we have a difference called the shtar chov hamukdom. I lend you $1,000, and instead of dating it chov vav kislev, we date it the Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan. So what's the big deal? So we dated a month and a half early. What's the difference? It's a big difference. Because what's going to happen is that you, the Malva, are going to walk at the base in 6 months from now with a piece of paper saying that Sobolowski owes you money starting from Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan. Now, in the interim of time, in the last 7 weeks, I may have sold some property and you're going to go after that property because any property that I owned at the time of the loan is, in a sense, has a lien, you have a lien on that property, you have a shivan on that property. So according to the document that happens to be false, according to the document that you have in your hand that says the loan took place 7 weeks ago, you're going to collect property that you're not entitled to. Whereas according to the truth that the loan only took place Chav Vav Kislev, you are not entitled to that property. So therefore, a shtar muktam is possible. You cannot ever have a shtar muktam. That's part of the reason we have the shtar of supers and chasanas. We sometimes run into issues what's called the shtar muktam. Because sometimes, so we have a chasana planned for Sunday afternoon. So the tell you no problem, the chuppah will be start on time, says schedule for 5 o'clock, shki is not till 6 o'clock, nothing to worry about. So we'll date the ksuba Sunday's date, sign it Sunday's date, and then 5 o'clock comes and goes, and 5:30 comes and goes, and then the first lining up, 5:45, by the time the wedding takes place, it's already the next day. So now you have what's called a potential issue of a shtar muktam. Now, a shtar muktam or a ksuba could pose a problem because, in theory, this woman has a document in her hand to collect from property. I mean, Baruch Hashem, they should live for many, many happy, healthy years. Don't you collect for anybody in the ksuba? But she has a document that's potentially false. But she has a document that will enable her to collect money that she's not entitled to because it's dated a day before the actual wedding really took place. So that could be a big, big problem in terms of ksubas. So you may have been at chasanas where all of a sudden under the chuppah they're starting bringing up the edim to start signing. What do they do that for? So very, in Eretz Yisrael they do it all the time. But in America we usually reserve that issue of signing right under the ksubah, right under the chuppah, for those bit of shmoshes to go weddings. There are certain times of the year, depending on the change of the clock and stuff, where it's every Sunday is like that, where it's just punk at the wrong time. So in the when you have an early wedding, it's not a problem. If a late wedding, it's not a problem. If someone right in the middle, the twilight weddings in the Sunday afternoons pose problems in terms of ksuba. So it's like she has to be on the ball in terms of dating the ksuba properly. So here we have a Mishnah that says if you have a shtar muktam, it's going to be a problem. If you have a shtar meuchar, it's not a problem. So let's say I lent you $1,000, and instead of dating it chav vav kislev, and we dated it aleph teves. So the date is wrong. The date is off. So big deal. I lost my right to collect for a couple of days. That's okay. I'm not going to take away something from somebody else illegitimately. So shtar meuchar is technically speaking going to be kosher. So comes the Gemara and says, wait a second. Shtar meuchar is kosher. It's true that you're not cheating anybody, but where's the drisha v'chakira? You just got finished telling me the Mishnah. Echad dini mamonos, echad dini nefashos, b'drisha v'chakira. Min HaTorah, you require Drish V'Chakira, but the Mishnah says explicitly, it was Aleph Teves. So we went, Aleph Teves hasn't happened yet. It's on the Chaf of Kislev. So we have Aleph Teves, Tavshin Pei Gimel, that's when the murder. So Ruch HaKadosh. Aleph Teves, Tavshin Pei Gimel, that's when the murder happened. So it's a joke. Obviously, that's a lack of a Jewish Rechikira. So comes the Gemara and says, how can you say, you require dish v'chakira and dinim amrus. With the rabbanon, you don't, because with the rabban the chamim were afraid that if you interrogate edim too much in dinim amrus, no one's gonna ever want to lend money. Imagine as follows: so you come to me and ask me for $100,000 loan. So I say to you, no problem. I'll lend you $100,000, but I just want to make sure Adam see that this loan took place. I want to be able to collect this loan in a month from now if you deny that you ever took it. So we bring to Adam, and I lend you $100,000. And then next month, when I take you to a dinner, when of course you lie and say you never borrowed the money, I bring you to Adam in. Basin starts asking him, Kashas and Maisach, what year of the Yovel cycle was it? What the day of the month was? I remember it was like a couple of weeks ago. I don't know exactly what day the Hebrew calendar was. So where did this take place? I don't remember. Was it in Bergenfield? Was it in Teaneck? I started asking them what color shirt did the lug wear. They're not going to remember the story. So guess what? You're not going to get your money. Next time when I ask you for a loan, when someone else comes and asks you, you're going to think a million times before you lend again money. If you know that it's so difficult for you to get your money back, you're never going to want to lend money. So one of the things that Chazal were very, very nervous about was, because Shlotino Delos Bifnei Lopin. Chazal understood that the lending of money is essentially the backbone of the economy. Things about interest rates, that's the yesodos of a healthy economy. If people can't borrow money from one another, so first of all, there will be some people who won't have any money to eat. They literally have to borrow money to survive. Those to be able to have businesses, those to be able to invest in anything, those to be able to buy property. Everyone's going to suffer if you're going to have Elas Delos Bifnei Lopin. This is the same reason why Chazal instituted Prizmo, because Hillel Soros, also people are not lending money to people is a disaster for everybody. So therefore, comes the B'chanin explains that mid the Araisa, you need Drish Shechakira, Mishbelechad Yalachem, you have to ask the Edom every single last question about the time and the place. But mid the Rabbanah, they did away with it. So this Mishnah that says that Shtari Chov HaMulchar Naksherim, this is post the Takhara Sochamim. After Chazal and Misake, that you don't need Dishkir anymore, these mummies, then we can say with a straight face that Shtari Chov Mukhar Naksherin. So I can't be a Gemara. So we had really a question and answer. We had a challenge to the Mishnah of Echadin Mummies, the Dishkir Kira. The challenge was from the case of Shtari Chov Mukhar, and we have the answer to the Gemara. With the Rabbanan, they changed the rule. Good, but the Gemara seems to read fairly smoothly. So come the Rishon and the Imbala with a very, very serious question. What the simple pshat in this Gemara is that let's put ourselves back in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu for a second. And the simple pshat of the Gemara is that Midah Araisa, every case of Dinei Mamonos requires Dishah Chakira, including Shtaros, because the question of the Gemara was from a Shtar. So the Gemara equated Shtaros and regular Edis as all Edis require Midah Araisa, Drish HaKira, which means those are the ABCs of Drish HaKira, the time and the place. There is a Gemara in Masechet Gittin, which we just learned in Bikiyas together, Daf Yud Zayin, where the Gemara asked the following question about a get. Mipnei ma tiknu zman b'gittin. Why did the Chachamim institute the writing of a date in a get, to which the Gemara spends two blot, which we almost finished those two blot already in Bikiyas? Why did they institute zman? One opinion says we're afraid that if you don't have his man, then the woman's going to be mezana. We're not going to know when she was mezana. Maybe he's not going to take her to a dinner. Or one opinion says, we're afraid she's going to eat the fruit, she'll like halacha, the whole back and forth, and that with very, very technical, two lot of technical, detailed reasons. Comes in the Mukha Yosef on the Rishonim on the back of the riff and says, wait a second. Why did Chazal decide one fine day to write put his vada in the star? Don't blame it on Chazal, because Baruch Hu decided that way. That if the halacha is that Eidus for Dini Mamonis requires Drish Chakira, and Drish Chakira means Makom Uzman, the reason why we have a date on a get is nothing to do with the Dibbid Rabbana that was made 2,000 years later. It's a Dibbid Torah. You require Drish Chakira. So what in the world is the Gemara talking about? How did the Gemara say in one place in Masechah Sanhedrin that Min HaTorah Dini Mamonis need Makom Uzman, need Drish Chakira? All Dini Mamonis, including Shtaros, require Midaraisa Makom Uzman. The Gemara gets it for two dafim, so it's not that way. B'pnei Matik Uzman also, the Gemara wakes up, good morning, B'pnei Matik Uzman begitin. Why did Chazal institute Uzman begitin? What happened to the entire Sugya, Masechah Sanhedrin? So hopefully we'll mention tomorrow. We have to, those who have a lot of time to read this Reb Chaim, so 2.5 pages of Reb Chaim to try to solve that problem. And the Yisod is going to be based on his principle of the Shtar Kinyan versus Shtar Raya.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mazel Tov, Rabbi. Mazel Tov. Rabbi, Mazel Tov.
For what? Heavy for what?
And a baby. A baby. Mazel Tov, Rabbi.
Thank you so much.
Mazel Tov. Have you what do you have? Pretty sad.